Well, thank you, Karen Roshi, and I appreciate all of your support and the support I get from the Sangha here. It's great to see everybody. And thanks for my Sangha family and my family members who are here. And we're going to do the talk, as Karen Roshi said, on the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. And before I start, you know, I just wanted to tell you, many of us take up Zen practice in order to find some measure of peace and understanding individually for ourselves. And then the more we practice, the more we begin to realize that truth or realization or whatever you want to call it, it can't exist in a vacuum. It's through community, Sangha, starting with our small, intimate group of practitioners and expanding into our households, neighborhoods, and the world at large, that we realize and actualize what we truly are. And, you know, it's extraordinary to me that even in this time of chaos and pandemic, we're not only able to share in Sangha community with one another, but even grow in the Dharma as we welcome newcomers, and I do welcome you, to our little Zoom Zendo. And I mean it very sincerely when I say welcome, and thank you for being here today. So as Karen Roshi mentioned, next Sunday, November 29th, you're all invited to attend our annual precepts and renewal ceremony during our weekly Sunday Zoom sitting. Same time, same place, next week. And special thanks to those of you, all of you who have shown up for Tuesday evenings this fall to explore the 10 Brave Precepts together. The talks and the discussions have been both thought-provoking and fruitful. So at our temple, taking the 16 precepts symbolizes a personal commitment to the path of Zen Buddhism. Why should one consider taking the 16 Bodhisattva precepts? Taking the precepts and making them part of your life is an important step in Zen practice. And before taking this step, it is good to have a working understanding of the precepts. And there are many ways to do this, by listening to the talks and discussions we've engaged in at our Tuesday evening sittings, by discussing it with one of our teachers and listening to their Dharma talks, by reading and studying, or a combination of all of the above. Now, it's not required that you know them inside out or are expected to follow each of them to the letter, which, by the way, is impossible. As some of us here will be renewing our commitment to these precepts for the 10th or 12th or 20th time, not so that we can be successful with them or to be good little Buddhists, but out of love and devotion for the way of life that they represent. The late Bernie Glassman Roshi lays out the foundation of the historical development of the precepts in his book, Infinite Circle, Teachings in Zen. First, he points out that in both Soto and Rinzai Zen, precept study traditionally comes at the student's completion of training. But it's his belief that here in the West, where most practitioners are lay people, it behooves us to start precept practice at the beginning of training and keep returning to them throughout our course of study. And in the time of Shakyamuni, the Buddha, he goes on, the precepts were developed organically in response to certain situations. Really, they were monastic rules, quote, to promote the harmony of the Sangha, unquote. As the precepts were exported to other countries, they started to become hard and fast rules with a separate set for monastic and lay people. Today, the 16 Bodhisattva precepts differ significantly in spirit and intent from the original set of rules developed in the days of the Buddha. Rather than prescribing norms of conduct, they now describe the various aspects of who we are fundamentally. They describe the aspects of who we are fundamentally. So you often hear, well, the precepts aren't just commandments. No, they don't tell us what to do. They tell us what we really are. Bernie Roshi has a lovely metaphor about keeping the precepts. He likens the precepts to a glass, quote, every moment we are dirtying, muddying, leaving traces on the glass. So, why are we doing this? Because we're using it. Even if we leave it where it is, without using it, it gets dirty. So violating the precepts is getting the glass dirty, which we are doing constantly. Breaking the precepts would be deliberately smashing it. End of quote. So we keep the precepts by polishing the glass. Polishing the glass. This reminds me of another story about polishing the glass. In this story, the glass is a mirror. I'm talking about the well-known story of how Hui Nong became the sixth patriarch of Buddhism. You may remember how Hui Nong, the illiterate peasant, was secretly accepted by Hongren, the fifth patriarch, because of his talent. But he sent him off to pound rice at the outskirts of the temple so the other monks wouldn't do him bodily injury. One day, Hongren summoned his followers, and he decreed there would be a poetry contest for them to demonstrate the depth of their understanding. The winner of the contest would receive his robe and bowl, symbolizing the teachings, and become his successor. The head disciple of the fifth patriarch anonymously composed a stanza and wrote, "The body is the Bodhi tree. The mind is like a bright mirror stand. At all times we must strive to polish it and must not let dust collect." 2 days later, the illiterate Hui Nong heard the poem being chanted at the monastery and inquired about it. An attendant explained to him the poem contest and the transmission of the Dharma. He asked someone to read the verse to him and then immediately composed this poem. "Bodhi originally has no tree. The mirror has no stand. The Buddha nature is always clear and pure. Where is there room for dust?" But then how do we reconcile these two views of the precepts? Glassman's glass, constantly being smudged and dirtied. Hui Nong's mirror, no tree, no stand, nothing for dust to collect on. How do we practice them? Polishing, endlessly polishing. As was said, the precepts are often misconstrued as a list of do's and don'ts, like the Ten Commandments. Robert Aitken, our grandfather in the Dharma, says the precepts are not commandments etched in stone, but expressions of inspiration. Expressions of inspiration written in something more fluid than water. Aitken also says, without the precepts as guidelines, Zen Buddhism tends to become a hobby made to fit the needs of the ego. So be careful how you interpret and use each of these jewels. Aitken Roshi's excellent book on the precepts, The Mind of Clover, is something of a foundational text here at our temple. And I would encourage you all to read his insightful commentary, wherein he explores each precept from a whole variety of viewpoints. The precepts are often described simply as the functioning of the enlightened mind. What is the enlightened mind? It's the mind that is not separate, that realizes self and other as one, that acts in accordance with that oneness. Reverend Zenju Earthland Manuel writes of oneness in her book, The Way of Tenderness, from the perspective of a Black lesbian woman. Quote, "To say that all beings exist within inherent oneness is to say more than we are all one, or we are all in this troubled world together. It isn't as if we are all different, but contained inside of some larger encompassing vessel. We are not like passengers in a leaky boat. Oneness existed before us and before the troubled world. Nothing can leak into or submerge oneness. It can't be possessed. It is not our oneness. Seeing the multiplicity of oneness means to acknowledge that there is an innate, non-historical experience of oneness that we have no control over. It is ungraspable. We are not one. Oneness is itself, and we are in it. End of quote. This oneness embodies the qualities of wholeness, completeness, wisdom, compassion, joy, and equanimity, if we're to put descriptors on something that is fundamentally beyond description. Oneness is vast and limitless, as we chant in the Kanon Sutra. It is eternal, joyous, selfless, and pure. The precepts point toward oneness. They are the mirror that reflects oneness. And most importantly, they are oneness itself. As we chant in Master Hakuin's words, this very body, the body of Buddha. Dogen says practice and enlightenment are the same thing. So our Zazen, our seated practice on the mat, is both the means and the end. Every activity is truly Zazen in motion, simultaneously exhibiting the twin aspects of practice and enlightenment. Peggy Roshi, in one of her talks on the precepts, said that this is how the precepts work, functioning as both the finger pointing to the moon and also the moon itself. The precepts describe enlightenment or oneness, and the precepts are not separate from this oneness. So let's step back now and examine these precepts in relation to oneness. So for the precept ceremony, we first take the three vows of refuge. I take refuge in Buddha. I take refuge in Dharma. I take refuge in Sangha. When we say we take refuge in the Buddha, Bernie Glassman pares it down to the essential, just be Buddha. Be Buddha. That is the oneness. He says, from the intrinsic standpoint, we say that the 16 bodhisattva precepts may be contained in the first. Be Buddha. Be the enlightened one. Be at one. This is the first precept refuge that then gets expanded to become all the three treasures. Be Buddha, be Dharma, be Sangha. And next are the three pure precepts. Renounce all evil or cease from evil. Practice all good. Save the many beings. And then the 10 grave precepts which come next are just expansion of these, the three pure precepts. Glassman calls the 10 grave precepts the functioning body of the three pure precepts. Renounce all evil, practice all good, save the many beings. So each of the 10 precepts can be seen from really innumerable points of view, and as we explored on the Tuesday night talks. But we specifically consider three perspectives or ways of looking. Taking all three of these perspectives together allows us to see how they can't be violated, even as we are constantly violating them. The three perspectives are, first, the literal view, second, the relational or compassionate view, and third, the intrinsic or Buddha nature view. Let's examine these three perspectives. And here I'm drawing from the workbook from the Zen Center of Los Angeles on the precepts. And before we go into these, let's just take a moment and resettle. Breathe. Think of how we listen to Teisho's. Don't judge or mull over these intellectually, but let them sink into you. Let each short phrase enter into your consciousness and just see how these viewpoints for each of the precepts resonate within you. Number one, I take up the way of not killing. Literal. Do not kill anything. Is this possible? We are always killing. Relational. Consider appropriate response. How can you respond in a way that minimizes harm? Intrinsic. There is no killing. You are not separate from anything. Two, I take up the way of not stealing. Literal. Don't take what isn't offered or given. Relational. Can stealing ever benefit others? Can you justify it? Intrinsic. There is nothing to steal or obtain. Three, I take up the way of not misusing sex. Literal, avoid sexual misconduct. Relational, this precept may not be limited to sex, but also can apply to craving and greed. Intrinsic, there is no separation between self and other. How can there be clinging? Four, I take up the way of not speaking falsely. Literal, do not lie. Relational, we must speak. How do we do so honestly and from the heart? How do we practice right speech? Intrinsic, no mistakes. Each and everything is the truth. Five, I take up the way of not using drink or drugs. Literal, don't take anything that clouds the mind. Relational, examine delusion. How do we cloud our minds? What are we ignoring? Intrinsic, not one drop of intoxicant can defile the Dharma. Six, I take up the way of not discussing the faults of others. Literal, don't gossip or slander. Relational, when is it appropriate to speak up? How do we do so? Intrinsic, don't hold on to fixed views about anybody or anything. Seven, I take up the way of not praising myself while abusing others. Literal, don't elevate or raise yourself up above others. Relational, can you really appreciate yourself and others? Intrinsic, there is no I or you. Eight, I take up the way of not sparing the Dharma assets. Literal, don't withhold, don't hold back. Relational, how do you practice generosity in thought, word, and deed? Intrinsic, what do you exclude as being not you? Nine, I take up the way of not indulging in anger. Literal, don't act out of your anger. Relational, distinguish between the natural rising of anger and the harboring or the perpetuating of anger. Intrinsic, all things are selfless. What is there to be angry at? 10, I take up the way of not slandering the three treasures. Literal, don't speak against Buddha, Dharma, or Sangha. Relational, see yourself and others as embodiments of the three treasures. Intrinsic, no distinctions between Buddhas and sentient beings. And so we have the 16 precepts that we may be taking for the first time or renewing for ourselves and for all beings next Sunday. Participation in the precepts renewal ceremony may inspire you to continue with this work, this practice, and at some point to make a lifelong commitment to this path. At that point, you may decide with the guidance of your teacher that it is appropriate to take Jukai. Jukai is a ceremony wherein you, having studied the precepts formally for 1 year, publicly present your own understanding of the precepts, receive a roksu that you have sewn or had made for you, and this is the biblite garment you see some of us wearing, and it represents the Buddha's robe. And then you formally become a part of Buddha's family. Right now, today, you may be wondering if it is the right time to take the precepts. Dharma teacher Tony Packer said, "The right time to take the precepts is when we resolve that we must come to awakening, when we are finally fed up with what she calls the endless repetition of the sense of me and mine, with all its fear, craving, accumulating, depending, clinging, despairing, and new craving." So, if you have a deep feeling, an affinity, or a desire to break free of the pain that Tony speaks of, and if you wholeheartedly wish to commit to the path of Zen, then by all means, take the precepts. For me, I really can't think of a better method of actualizing the phrase that we repeat at the end of every one of our Dharma talks. Together with all beings, we realize the way.